everyone. Welcome to another episode of Bitcoin Banter. Have Rick and Tony back together. It's good to have the gang all here. Gentlemen, let's jump right into the news this week. So Sam Callahan had an interesting tweet, and I think the long story short here is everyone is buying Bitcoin. MicroStrategy bought another 51,000. Marathon announced a $700 million convertible note to acquire more Bitcoin. Semler, Metaplanet, all the usual suspects. The game theory seems to be kicking in. Tony, why don't you share your reaction to this?
Yeah, man, this is crazy. This is absolutely wild news. You know, game theory on full steroids here. This is, you know, something that we've been waiting for a long time, and a lot of people have been predicting. You know, like everyone and his grandmother is FOMOing in now, and now it's happening at such a high level. You know, government, institutional, you know, everybody's, you know, the race to the finish line to see who's going to pick up, you know, as much as possible of this asset that, you know, it's the only thing that they're going to come after at some point, because, you know, what else are they going to buy? Like, I've been saying this for such a long time. Nation state FOMO is unavoidable because none of these guys trust each other, right? So if they're going to standardize on something globally, what is it going to be? It has to be something they know the other party cannot have an advantage over them with, right? And there's nothing else out there other than Bitcoin. And so once that finally clicks into whoever is making the decision on such high levels, well, this is what you have now. You have, you know, the game theory on fun full blast. It's like giddy up, you know, let's see who has the most money. Maybe at some point we see the money printers, you know, also, you know, engage on full throttle to see who's going to print the most to buy whatever else is left on the market. And who wins? Everyone who's known this from a very long time ago and who's done the work, held it in self-custody, and just literally just chilled out and, you know, ignored the distractions and the FUD, waiting for this moment to happen. A mathematical certainty. All he had to do was read a few books, understand, have a little bit of common sense, and just wait it out. And voila, here it is in full motion.
Rick, what do you think?
Yeah, well, I mean, as Tony puts it, right, like everybody's going to buy Bitcoin, right? Whether that's nation states, whether that's, you know, individuals, whether it's Michael Saylor and MicroStrategy and various companies, right? Like Tony says, the more people who figure this out, the more people enter the race. And, you know, now we're starting to see, well, just last week's banter, right? We were talking about strategic reserves and, you know, the US government potentially at some point printing money to buy Bitcoin. You've got, you know, what's interesting is about these companies raising or trying to buy Bitcoin is they're doing it by raising debt, right? So I think we were saying, I'm not a MicroStrategy expert, right? And there's people who do spaces on MicroStrategy like every single day on Twitter, right? Who are obsessed about this. But as I understand it, you know, he can raise money at less than 1% interest, right? And then throw that money into Bitcoin. So, you know, there's very few people who can raise capital that cheaply and buy Bitcoin with it, right? Which is kind of interesting, right? It's almost like using fiat to attack itself, right? By swapping it into Bitcoin. He's built a little machine that turns dollars into Bitcoin, and everybody seems keen on that. And then it's fascinating, isn't it? Because he's been doing it for a while without anybody really jumping in behind him and copying him. But now you're sort of seeing, like, there's, what was it, SMLR, there's Mara Holdings. And what's really crazy is, did anyone see, there was like, I don't know how this works, but there was something about like Microsoft shareholders were now going to like discuss, I think this happens on like December 10th. They're all going to discuss whether Microsoft should start buying Bitcoin on their balance sheet. I mean, that's a massive company, like much, much bigger than MicroStrategy, right? So who knows, man? I think this is going to get absolutely ludicrous. Like, can you imagine the US Central Bank, the Federal Reserve printing money to buy it? You know, maybe the Bank of England starts doing the same thing. Maybe, you know, the European Central Bank starts printing money. Then you've got Microsoft, Apple, you know, like the MicroStrategies are going to look like little fish fairly quickly, right? I mean, you know, he's built up quite the lead, but, oh man, I mean, yeah, like Tony said, like this is kind of what everybody expected in the long run anyway, and it is just playing out. And, you know, maybe the window of opportunity is shortening now to get yourself some Bitcoin and move it into self-custody and get yourself set up. Because otherwise you might be one of these people who gets relegated to the layer twos, right? Because these buyers have unlimited funds to buy Bitcoin with. They will push you out of the market, to a point where maybe you're not self-custodying your Bitcoin because it's like too expensive for you, right? The amount that you've bought is so small, so you end up using layer two solutions and the Lightning Network, and maybe you have to trust third parties a bit more. So yeah. You know, if you've got Bitcoin or you haven't got Bitcoin, now's the time to self-custody.
Definitely. So I have a follow-up question for you guys. So you hear a lot about this notion of like the super cycle, right? Like kind of where the 4-year cycles come to an end, and like we kind of there'll still be volatility where it's relatively low global adoption, but Bitcoin will just continue its upward trajectory rather indefinitely. Do you see are there variables in play now, like nation state adoption, mass corporate adoption is a possibility, more favorable regulatory headwinds, probably with the Trump administration, for example, like those sorts of things that might make this time actually different? Or have you been around long enough that you hold out no hope for that?
Yeah, that's a very good point, man. And I've been discussing this lately with a few people. I don't think we're going to see as much volatility anymore, specifically because now the big players are in this and they're not buying for the same reasons that caused past volatility. They're not buying this, to buy low to sell high and, play that silly game again. They're buying it now for, much bigger plans like strategic global reserves and things of that sort. And when the supply on the market is gone, well, I highly doubt you're ever going to see most of the institutionally held Bitcoin sold. Maybe for very, very specific reasons, but just to sell it for the sake of making more fiat profit, I don't think we'll see this. And the downside to this is that it really isolates Bitcoin at this point for those that have money. I think it was, I heard NVK say this at one point, that it's Bitcoin is no longer for poor people. And sadly, that is turning out to be very, very true because, as these big boys come in and like siphon everything, how are poor people that live literally from penny to penny on a daily basis, how are they going to afford this? Like even a 0.5% drop could be detrimental to their daily lives, right? So they won't necessarily jump in at this stage, simply because they can't afford it. They'll probably reap the benefits of Bitcoin later on, on later layer two, three, four. But the days of, functioning on on-chain Bitcoin, like most people these days are doing, that's going to be like a wild, wild, faraway dream for, I'd say, 98% of the remaining general population that has yet to even pay attention to this asset, despite all this craziness that's going on now. So I don't foresee the volatility to drop as much. If it drops, I don't know, maybe 15%. Not even. I mean, why would it? I mean, think of it logically. They're fighting each other to rack up as much of it as possible. Why would they sell it? Like, what's the incentive to sell? They don't need to make more fiat profits. They can just print that shit if they wanted to, right? So that's why I don't see the point of them selling it.
Yeah, Rick, what do you think?
I don't know. I don't know. Like, for at least, like, so I've been around three cycles now, and every cycle, people have said, right, this is the one. This is the one. Like, no, number go up forever, right? Like, it's never going to crash again. No more bear markets, right? Like, super cycle. It's not the first time we've heard it, right? And I think maybe, I think I'm probably on the other side of the fence. I think we might see more bear markets. And the simple fact for that is, well, there's a few reasons. Like, number one, I think that sometimes as Bitcoiners, we look at it like we understand it, right? And we maybe overestimate how obvious this is to everybody else because it makes sense to us. So we maybe give too much credit to the rest of the population suddenly realizing what's going on. So, I mean, I'll give you an example, right? Like every cycle, we all kind of think, well, shitcoins will die this time. Because no one's stupid enough to buy that again, right? Because every time, like, I mean, you could chart all the shit coins against Bitcoin since their inception and they're all getting hammered, right? And yet every cycle people buy shit coins again. And interestingly, when you look at like some things in history, right? Like in Weimar Germany, when they went through hyperinflation, like the value of gold was like, man, the volatility on gold was crazy. Now, logic would say, well, surely it just went up in a straight line because the money was dying. So surely gold's the obvious trade. Everyone rushed into gold. But actually, it kind of kicked off, like the money dying kind of kicked off this weird, like, speculation and mania amongst everyone, right? And my logic there is that, like, people were so in so much trouble that all they had left was gambling, right? So they just ran around throwing money at this, then I'll throw money at that, then I'll try and trade on this and trade on that. So I don't know. I'm in two minds. I think Tony's got a good point, which is, you have these huge, huge institutions now holding it, and they're not going to paper hand this stuff. So that surely reduces some volatility. But then also you've got this kind of like red herring, like no idea what happens when the US dollar eventually dies, right? Like that's pretty hard to predict what the second order effects of that might be. So who knows? Who knows? Well, I'll tell you what I do know. What I do know is that the sensible way to approach this is to hold some Bitcoin, keep it in self-custody, and sit on your hands and don't make any stupid mistakes and try and like run around making smart ass decisions, right? Because that's how you end up. Like, all you need to know is that Bitcoin is, the best asset for you to hold at the moment and for the foreseeable, right? It's the hardest money. No one can take it away from you. The dollar's in big trouble. So, who knows? Maybe it doesn't kick around like a mule as much as it used to, or maybe it goes even more crazy than it used to. It kind of almost doesn't matter, right? If you've got a 5 or a 10 year, or even, well, ideally, like a 30, 50, 100, 1,000 year time frame, and you think Bitcoin will appreciate in that time, then you don't need to worry about necessarily how it gets there. Just adopt Bitcoin, move to better quality money, and your life will improve year on year on year,
Yeah, sage advice. I'll give you my take. So my base case is this. I believe that we are going to see reduced volatility, but that the cycles will continue to some degree because I think there's still a lot of people who are taking Bitcoin on or considering it for their balance sheet who still don't fundamentally understand Bitcoin. They understand that it's scarce and that it's, maybe certain attributes. I think the thing that could change. So I think instead of 80% drawdowns, we're going to see a 20 or a 50% drawdown or whatever, maybe, whatever the case may be. I'm not making like a specific forecast there. But I could see that very much changing based on what the United States does in terms of a strategic reserve. So my base case for how that plays out is, I don't see the United States proactively purchasing more Bitcoin and making a big spectacle of their Bitcoin strategy over the next few years. But I anticipate that the, stockpile that Trump referenced in his speech in Nashville, that, kind of maybe a couple hundred thousand that the government currently owns, them keeping that and just say, we're not going to sell our Bitcoin, but we're also not like adding to our stack. This isn't like, it's not really that strategic. It's just kind of like something that who knows, worst case scenario, we've got some or whatever. To me, that sends a very different signal to the world than proactively buying tens of thousands of Bitcoin on a daily basis, right? And so those two potential paths, as I see them, I think would lead us a very different direction. If the United States starts getting aggressive in accumulating Bitcoin, I think the game theory kicks in quickly, and I think the super cycle thing might be real. If that doesn't happen, which I don't think it will, I think we continue to see some of the volatility just at a reduced rate.
You don't think the US will get serious about Bitcoin? I think it's quite the opposite, actually, with the team that's currently put in place. These are all people that understand this asset exceptionally well. And I think as time, goes on, as more people on that team and starts understanding it, to that level, I think they will be more aggressive. I mean, why wouldn't they? Right? I mean, they have all the upside to be aggressive on this. What I don't like about this scenario, though, is that it locks out the people. Like, I'm not necessarily a fan about government owning everything. Like, Bitcoin was created for 8 billion people, but 8 billion people are asleep at the wheel. That's the problem. Like, you can't force someone to pay attention to something, even though it was created for their own good. This is what pisses me off. is that you try to talk to some folks. You tell them, listen, you dummy, this is going to upgrade your life. Just pay attention. Listen. Just try to be open-minded. And then they find 100 million ways to avoid doing that.
Yeah.
So then how do you respond to someone like this, right? Like it's really upsetting to watch this. And yes, of course you're going to get governments and institutions come in and sweep the whole playing field and abuse the situation and, you know, play the odds to their advantage. Of course they're going to do this. It's a free market, right? If someone is too stupid to act, well, there's another one who's not that stupid who will act. And so this is how it always plays out. It's horrible. I don't like seeing this because I've seen bad people do bad things. And it's the same bad people now that have an advantage over the good ones.
Yeah.
So that's the part that really irks me. But what are you going to do?
Yeah, I hear you. I guess my comment or my response to your comment about the team that's been assembled, I think that the only person who I have strong indication seems to understand Bitcoin in a meaningful way within the Trump administration, Bitcoin, not crypto or not, you know, just free markets, is RFK Jr. I think if he was going to take on a financial role, for example, in the Trump administration, I could see them getting more aggressive. I think Vivek and some of these other guys, and even Trump, like they talk a lot about crypto and Bitcoin. And so like my sense is that they don't really understand Bitcoin. And
they launched that World Liberty.
Yeah. Yeah. What more? Yeah. What more evidence do you need?
I'd say I'm not even super bullish on RFK, right? Because I remember his speech in Nashville, and he said he was going to buy like 20% of the entire supply of Bitcoin over the next 5 years. And I'm like, good luck, buddy. Like, what are you talking about? There's like less than 1% or whatever left to mine. I don't know where RFK thinks he's getting them. He's going to corner 20% of the Bitcoin market. I think that ship has sailed. So I don't know. I tend to agree with you. Who knows, yeah, right? Well, we can do is hope that they don't buy it all, right? That I think that would be all of our preference, right?
Yeah. My point with RFK isn't that he understood the logistical challenge of accumulating 4 million Bitcoin or whatever his target was. But I think he understands in principle, you know, at least he's claimed to put a significant portion of his net worth into Bitcoin. He seems to understand Bitcoin, not crypto, at least in my view. But he's leading up the Department of Health and Human Services or something. Like, he's going to have a busy time doing whatever the hell he's doing there. And I think we're going to be left to, you know, people like Cynthia Lummis trying to pass legislation, adopting a strategic reserve. And she's going to be fighting an uphill battle in Congress where none of them understand Bitcoin, you know, and certainly none of them understand Bitcoin, not crypto. So anyway, that's kind of why my base case is we're going to continue to have cycles with reduced volatility, in large part because of a bit of nation state adoption. I think more importantly, institutional adoption. Like, I think Microsoft's going to vote no on a Bitcoin reserve in December. But someone else will come along and do it. Someone's eventually going to do what Saylor's doing and maybe not catch up with him, but that's going to kick off game theory. You know, if Apple does it, then Microsoft's going to have to revisit that decision, right? And so, yeah, we'll see. But yeah, there's no easy answers. Guys, we spent like 17, 18 minutes on just this one. Let's move on to Carisdale Capital. So this was a tweet that Rick, you sent me from back in March. They were shorting MicroStrategy. To their credit, they were long Bitcoin, but I think they might have, this trade was just a wash. I don't know the you know what they were thinking, but they basically said that MicroStrategy had an unjustifiable 2.6x price per share to the spot price of the Bitcoin that they held. Rick, why don't you mock these folks for a couple minutes?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think we could just do this one like really, really quickly, right? Like, I think that the point here is like these guys came out on Twitter quite publicly on like March 28th, said like, oh, we don't like the MicroStrategy play. Everyone's an idiot. You shouldn't keep buying MicroStrategy. It's really obvious that this thing is going to crash and burn and all that sort of stuff. So they, for whatever reason, I don't know, decided to go publicly short MicroStrategy at $170, right? And I think it's what, like $350 or higher? Like it's definitely getting close to $400 now, right? So Yeah, I think the point is, like, it's funny to keep these receipts, right? Because you're like, whoa, hey, look, every time someone tries to bet against Bitcoin, or it seems now even like a Bitcoin proxy like MicroStrategy, like, you've got to be out of your mind. Like, look at the price chart of Bitcoin for the last 15 years. And all right, yeah, I get it. There's big 80% drawdowns, but look at the line. Like, it's generally like this, right? It's going up all the time. So yeah, to come out and publicly short MicroStrategy is crazy. And I think the only thing I'd say that's worth saying is that, like, this is why you don't trade and gamble and try and think that you can predict where any of this is going. Like, well, I'll predict where some of it's going, right? Bitcoin's going up and to the right. At what speed? I'm sure I have no idea. Probably quick enough to make me reasonably wealthy before I die, right? That's good enough for me. As for, like, trying to play clever, like, I'm long Bitcoin, but I'm short MicroStrategy, like, this is the epitome of mid-curving it, right? Like, you think you're really a genius, but you're not. You're right in the middle distribution of IQ. And you should really realize that, like, just be dumb. Just, like, buy Bitcoin and sit on your hands and do nothing. And you've outsmarted yourself because you think you're some, like, giga genius. Well, look, fuck around, find out is what they say, right? And that's what these people do. Like, stop being a degenerate. Buy Bitcoin, hold on to it, save it, and yeah, you'll be fine. But yeah, always good to do a little joke at these people now and again.
Rick, so March 28th, MicroStrategy closed at once about 170, and it closed yesterday at 399. So,
Ouch.
yeah. So hopefully they really offset that with their long Bitcoin position, but who
Yeah, but
knows?
that means Michael, they bought Bitcoin and the Bitcoin's currently at 90 odd whatever $1,000, and these idiots managed to make no money.
Yeah, exactly.
Imagine that. They bought Bitcoin, they made no money. That's a disaster.
Yeah, them and what's his name, Dave Portnoy, the Barstool Sports guy. Have you seen his videos of, like, he's like, I'm the only guy who hasn't made money. How do you lose money in Bitcoin? Well, you're not alone, Dave. All righty, Tony, what do you think?
Not much to add there, man, except this did not age well and certainly blew up in their face. Don't trade Bitcoin. Don't bet against anyone who understands Bitcoin. You are the one who's going to end up at the short end of that stick. That's it.
Yeah, well said. All righty, we've got so Anchor Watch is a Lloyd's of London cover holder. So they've been advocating Bitcoin owners use traditional insurance market. So basically, I looked into this, and the best I can tell is that Anchor Watch has a custody product, I think called Trident Vault. And effectively, if you use Trident Vault, they insure, or at least have the you have the option to insure your Bitcoin against loss, theft, whatever. From what I gather, the kicker is you have to custody there. So share keys, they take certain precautionary measures or whatever. It sounds like maybe it's sort of collaborative custody style. You get maybe a controlling number of keys, but they disperse theirs geographically, which to me seems like a lot of counterparty risk to take on. Never mind the fact that they could. I don't know how you actually access it. Do you have to use their proprietary tools or app or what have you? But it's an interesting development because I think it's. I was telling you guys beforehand, I was working in cybersecurity early in the days of, or relatively early in the days of, cyber liability insurance, and people were having a hell of a time figuring out how do we even, how do we even begin to perform a calculation on the risk that we're taking on when we provide a policy to a company on their cyber exposure. So Tony, why don't you start? I'm just curious to hear, if you think this is a thing of the future, if this, like, yeah, any takeaways would be interesting.
Well, this is a very interesting product. I mean, at some point you should have expected something like this to show up. I just don't know how they're going to fund this. I mean, it seems like they're trying to apply, guidelines and rules and products and services based on a legacy system onto something that we've never seen before. And I just don't know how this is going to play out. I mean, if you have to custody your Bitcoin with them, which I'm assuming you're going to have to do, well, there's a risk associated to this, and as far as they're concerned, I mean, since we've never seen this before, there's many things that they're likely not thinking of that can go wrong, unexpectedly. that can cause, you know, catastrophic losses. So I'm not really sure. Like I'd watch this like very with a very interesting eye, but a very cautious one as well, just to see how they're going to do this. I'm not a big fan of anything collaborative custody. I mean, Bitcoin, and as far as I'm concerned, was created for individual responsibility, full self-custody. You don't need anybody's assistance to help you protect your money. You just have to learn how to do it yourself. Use common sense. There are security protocols that can be easily followed by everyone. And as long as you do that, you know, you can keep the trust within your people. You don't need, you know, third-party institutions involved in that process. But, you know, the world is the way it is, and some people will always think that, you know, having somebody else do the work is somehow, you know, the better approach or the safer approach. If that works out, great. If it doesn't work out, well, look in the mirror and blame the one staring back at you.
Yeah. I mean, I think in terms of funding it, you know, I'm no expert on the insurance market, but my understanding is, you know, you've got reinsurance companies, like really, it's not usually a direct hit to a single entity who's underwriting a particular policy. It's spread through the economy. If the right people are hit, you know, you've always got the government bailout backstop in place, and the money printer can fire up and cover people who might have special interests or have donated immensely to political campaigns, that sort of thing. So I'm not sure that covering I think there's a limit, like $100 million or something, which is a lot of money, but, you know, it's a big, you know, multi-trillion dollar market. Rick, what's your reaction to this?
Yeah, I mean, it's a fairly new thing, right? So I'm not going to pretend that I fully understand how it works, but there's certainly some like interesting questions. Like I skim read a couple of articles. Like I think first off, it does seem as though they're going to make you use proprietary tools, right? Apparently they've created some sort of this is interesting, right? They're claiming to have created some sort of proprietary self-custody solution, right? Some sort of proprietary custody solution. Now, the first question you've got to ask yourself there is like, what does that actually mean, right? Because it's all cryptography that Bitcoin is based upon, right? There's nothing that they can necessarily do with Bitcoin that nobody else could do. So I'd question what bit of it is really proprietary, right? And then they say, you know, it has some advanced options like things like time locks, right? Which is something I've heard of before, right? You can basically like send Bitcoin to an address and lock it up. It can't be spent for, you know, whatever value you want. You could say 100 years if you want. But I tell you what, I mean, here, look, I'll insure you if you put your Bitcoin into a time lock address, because nobody's moving it, right? Like, nobody's stealing it. So I'd be happy to insure that. So I don't fully understand why I'd need an insurance company to time lock my BTC, because I mean, by time locking it, I'm ensuring that it's not going to get moved or stolen, right? So that one I don't fully get. But the problem there is like, I don't like the idea of using proprietary tools, and it's almost certain that there's no way they're insuring Bitcoin that's in 100% self-custody, because that would clearly be impossible, right? Because you could just say to them, oh yeah, I got hacked and the Bitcoin moved. Look, you know, there's the transaction ID, but you might have just sent it to another address that you control. And then how do you prove anything in Bitcoin is very, very difficult to do, even if you can follow the on-chain analytics, right? Like who pushed the buttons and stuff, who knows, and who controls each address, who knows? So clearly, yeah, it's going to be this like thing in the middle where I think basically what we're looking at here is like a collaborative custody solution, just like the ones that we've normally seen. But now with this added layer of, plus we'll insure it as well, because, you know, we're a world famous insurance company or whatever. I would imagine, like you say, it's mainly going to be offered towards like big institutions, which to a certain extent maybe makes a little bit more sense, right? Because, you know, maybe a company needs to look after their Bitcoin stash now, but the CEO, don't forget, is just an employee, and the CEO might change or might leave the company, right? He doesn't personally own that Bitcoin, the company does. So, you know, maybe that's why these collaborative custody solutions maybe make slightly more sense if you're a business, because the people are changing constantly, right? And maybe, you know, with your fiduciary duties and stuff, the insurance makes a bit more sense as well. What I find interesting, though, is like, what do they do? What do they do? Let's say that they insured Coinbase, right? And Coinbase has all the ETF funds and everything in it. Let's say there was a huge black swan event, and for whatever reason, the Coinbase stash goes, you know, poof, gone, it's stolen or whatever. How exactly would Lloyds cover their liability for all that Bitcoin? Because, I mean, maybe what they can do is they can maybe pay out in dollars, right, for the value of all the Bitcoin that was stolen. But what they can't do is replace the stolen Bitcoin, because where would they get it, right? So what, I'm kind of curious, like, what exactly are they insuring? And then also imagine they insure all the Coinbase Bitcoin, and today it's worth 100 billion, just for argument's sake, right? And then in 5 years' time, it's worth 5 trillion. Does Lloyds have the kind of readies to actually cover that? And how does that change the insurance contract? I mean, so many questions. I mean, I think for an individual Bitcoiner, this is maybe not a product I'd get super excited about just now. I don't think it's probably aimed at you unless you're mega bucks, right? I'm not sure it's going to offer you much value. And I think what Tony said is bang on. In that anything that these companies can do in terms of, you know, they said we've got an innovative solution. Well, not really. Anything that they can do with Bitcoin, you can do with Bitcoin, including time locks, including multi-sig, including distributing your keys geographically. You know, you could do all of this with your family if you wanted a multi-sig. It doesn't have to be some faceless corporation of people that you don't know or trust. And the other thing is that whenever you work with any institution, whether it's just a straight up third party exchange or a collaborative custody partner or some insurance product, in every single scenario, you have to give up 100% of your privacy, right? They get to see everything that you own. Every time you spend Bitcoin, they're going to monitor that. You might even need their permission to make those transactions in the first place, right? So it's kind of a little bit like the antithesis of Bitcoin, right? This is meant to be freedom money, not lock it up in a glass cage in someone else's house and just look at it money. So interesting, but yeah, not sure what I make of that yet.
Yeah, I agree. All righty, last one we've got. For a laugh, we've got Binance introduces BFUSD, a yield-bearing stablecoin offering 20% interest. I feel like we've seen this before, and I don't recall it ending well. What baffles me is like I was telling you guys, like before, I could understand a stablecoin offering yield because a lot of the underlying asset is going to be probably government bonds, something, you know, highly liquid. Maybe you're earning 4%, and maybe you offer a portion of that yield to an individual for having the stable coin. I don't know why you wouldn't just buy government bonds yourself. I guess the use case could be, well, it's easier to send this around the world than it is to buy and, you know, sell and trade, you know, in government debt. 20% or 19.55%. I have no idea where that yield is coming from. And I would love to hear, Rick, let's start with you. What do you think is happening here?
Man, I think I'm losing my mind, Michael, to be honest with you, because, you know, time is a flat circle, isn't it? We're just going round and round and round again. Like, I'm like, someone let me off this ride. I'm bored of the simulation now. Like, I've seen the same episode 4 times, right? Like, every time we go through a cycle, eventually someone starts offering yield products, right? So like, there was Luna, there was Celsius, there was BlockFi, like, you know, I mean, in all the different various guises, right? Like, each of those things was slightly different in the way that they would offer you yield on your Bitcoin or yield on your money, right? But I mean, the first thing that should strike you as questionable immediately is the fact that they're offering you 20%. Where, right? If they're offering you 20%, it suggests that they're earning more than 20% for it to be worth their while, right? So I don't know what magic money tree Binance has planted last year that they're now shaking. That, you know, this, I mean, it's just so bonkers, right? Like, this is, It's interesting to see it like emerging now because it is you see it every time in a bull market, right? So I would expect this is just the beginning, right? 20% is just the beginning. You wait till like 60% and 70% returns and God knows what else, and all manner of shit coins, all manner of NFTs, all manner of, get rich quick schemes where somehow the people who buy these things think maybe the universe just owes them one, right? Like maybe life is that easy. Maybe I can sit on the couch, eat Cheetos, and watch like Looney Tunes cartoons all day because CZ's just going to pay me 20% interest on my money. I don't have to work again. I mean, if that seems like plausible to you and doesn't sound too good to be true, then you need to give your head a wobble, right? Because you eventually, at some point, you are going to get wrecked if you mess around with these kind of products. The famous question in Bitcoin is, where does the yield come from? And if you don't know the answer to that question, the answer is you are the yield. At some point, you will be harvested.
Absolutely, Tony.
Man, I'd rather not stay on top of the story because it's going to end in a horrific way. We've seen this playbook before. It never ends well. The crazy thing about this is that Binance knows that there's a whole bunch of dummies out there that will jump in head first as soon as they see these headlines, 19.5%. They will literally take their savings from wherever, whatever bank account that they have, and dump it in there because they automatically think they're going to be making money. I've seen this happen before, people that get into shit coins before they discover Bitcoin, they repeat these same processes. It's a desperate play, right? Like things globally are so bad for so many people, financially especially, that anything is like a glimmer of hope. And everybody wants that fast money. It doesn't exist. There's no such thing as fast money. And if it is, you have to be really fast to take advantage of it. Otherwise, it's going to disappear just as quickly as it came in. So this 19.5, I mean, anyone who's been following Luna a few years ago, that's exactly what their anchor platform was doing as well, 19.5. And that was like a $60 or $80 billion catastrophe. It went to zero literally in less than a day. So brace yourself. I mean, I find it really shitty that Binance is actually contemplating doing this. But again, I guess they must be capitalizing on, again, human stupidity or ignorance for that matter. And since it's a free market, why not?
Yeah, I think people need to understand that what you're really earning is vapor because if the it, best case they are doing something insane to top a 20% yield to be able to pay you 20% yield. Kind of reminds me, there's this company I'm looking at their website right now called Babylon, where you can stake your Bitcoin. And you get voting rights on a proof of stake chain of, I think, of your choice to some degree, and you can earn yield in that coin. And I'm like, why would you put up Bitcoin? If you understand anything about Bitcoin, why would you put up Bitcoin to earn something that they can just make more of, or whoever can just change the protocol and dilute everyone else's issuance of that cryptocurrency? Like,
Yeah,
it's just
deposit your
insane.
Bitcoin with me and I'll pay you 1,000 Ritcoin every minute if you want. Like, that's how
Yeah,
stupid this offer is, but people do it, right?
it's crazy. But this is so for people who are listening and newer to this, and I'm relatively newer, but I was fortunate to be forged in the bear market of 2022, and I saw all of this going down, and the Bitcoiners turned out to be right. So stay humble, stack sats. Anything we didn't touch on there that you want to comment on, or are we good?
There's no such thing as free money. The only money that is money is Bitcoin. Everything else is pure garbage.
Well said. All righty. For everyone listening, thank you guys so much for taking time. Go to the bitcoinway.com/podcast. We can help you self-custody your Bitcoin instead of sharing your keys with someone else, staking it for yield on some crappy cryptocurrency product. We can help you protect generational wealth the right way. We help with privacy phones, online privacy. If you live in the UK today and you want to get out because everyone's being arrested for talking, you can check out our Plan B residency option. Lots of great stuff. So go to the bitcoinway.com/podcast, schedule a free 30-minute consult with a member of the team to learn more. Gentlemen, thank you for your time. Good to have the whole team back together.
Happy to be here, Michael. Thank you.
Cheers, Michael.
Cheers, guys.